Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. In the first hour of the show this morning, we will be exploring some of the history of the Small Business Administration, an entity that continues to exist, it's been around since 1953, continues to exist despite having been rocked from time to time by scandal, and also despite the fact that interests in Washington from time to time have said that they thought that the SBA should be closed down. We'll be exploring this area this morning with Jonathan Bean. He's Associate Professor of History at Southern Illinois University and has done some writing on the subject. He's the author of two books, one, Beyond the Broker State, A History of the Federal Government's Politics Toward Small Business, between 1936 and 61. More directly, a more recent book, which is titled Big Government and Affirmative Action, The Scandalous History of the Small Business Administration. That's the subtitle. It is published by the University Press of Kentucky. As we talk with our guest, Jonathan Bean, you should certainly feel free to pick up the telephone and call us and ask your own questions or make comments. All we ask of people is just that they try to be brief, so that we can keep things moving along, but anybody's welcome to call. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, so that means no matter where you're listening, around Illinois, Indiana, in fact, if you were listening on the Internet, wouldn't matter where you were in the U.S., you could call, and that is 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Professor Bean, hello.
Yes, good morning, David.
Thanks for talking with us. We appreciate it.
Pleased to be here.
We'll get into this in some detail, I'm sure, but in the conclusion of the book, you make a fairly sweeping statement, so maybe we can start there as a way of getting an overview, and that is that the history of the Small Business Administration is a microcosm of American government in the last half of the 20th century.
Yes.
That's saying a lot.
Yes, it is. Well, let me start off by saying that the Small Business Administration it represents an institution, small business, that embodies some of the values that most Americans hold dear, like individualism, equality of opportunity, self-reliance. Since its establishment in 1953, it's been rocked by partisan politics in the 50s between a Republican president and a Democratic Congress. Then in the 60s, it became very much involved with the war on poverty. It pioneered affirmative action even before the Civil Rights Act went into effect. It promoted black capitalism under Richard Nixon. That was a centerpiece of his administration. And in the 1980s, it was one of the very few agencies that Ronald Reagan tried to eliminate entirely. In fact, he tried twice. And many observers in the 1980s saw this attempt to abolish the SBA as a test of the Reagan Revolution. And when they failed to eliminate the Small Business Administration, many concluded in the late 80s that the Reagan Revolution was dead.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to look at over time who it is, the various political interests that supported the Small Business Administration and why. There were Republicans who supported it because they were concerned that they were seen as the party of big business. There were Democrats who supported it because they were concerned that people thought Democrats were anti-business. In Congress, it was supported because it was a way of distributing pork. People who were concerned about affirmative action supported it for that reason. One wonders, did anybody support it because they thought it was good for small business?
Well, you know, that's a real tough question. The Small Business Administration has always been a pet of Congress. One writer said it, you know, SBA is the petty cash drawer of the Congress. And the Congress over the years has dumped a number of different programs, everything from loans and contracts for small business to disaster loans for people hit by hurricanes and tornadoes and the like. Yes, there are people that are sincerely concerned with promoting small business. There are others who use it to shield themselves from criticism that they don't really represent business. So you can have liberals like Ted Kennedy or arch conservatives, both appealing to the small business ideology. The appeal of small business is almost universal. I think maybe behind farmers, small business is widely admired throughout American society. But one of the problems is it's an amorphous concept. What is a small business? Members of Congress in their speeches often speak of mom-and-pop retailers, the corner grocer or druggist. And most people, when surveyed, think a small firm is a mom and pop, a company with 10 employees, maybe 20 employees. But in fact, the SBA represents so-called small firms that can have hundreds, thousands of employees. At one point, the American Motors Corporation was certified as a small company. So it's the concept of small business is popular, but there's been some controversy over what exactly is a small business, and does a small business interest even exist?
Well, that's a fascinating question, and I think is one. Indeed, as you suggest, one of the points of controversy is over time people have allowed this definition of small business to be, to put it mildly, to be flexible depending on what sort of interest they were after. And I think in that particular case, the one that you point to, some people would say, well, how in the world could you view American Motors as being a small business? In fact, what from time to time people have said is, well, it can be a big industry, but if it's a small, if it's a smaller player in a big industry, then we will consider that a small business, which doesn't, in a way, as you say, really square up with what most people think of when they think of small business, which is truly something that only has maybe 10 or 20 people working.
Right, right. And so the political appeal is undercut by so much of the agency's resources going to what I call not-so-small businesses, companies that can do well on their own and are not truly small businesses.
Our guest, and maybe this would be a good place to reintroduce, our guest is Jonathan Bean. He is Associate Professor of History at Southern Illinois University and has written about both federal government policy towards small business and also about the history of the Small Business Administration. In fact, his most recent book is dealing with that. The title is Big Government and Affirmative Action. The subtitle is The Scandalous History of the Small Business Administration. It's published by the University Press of Kentucky. And questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. The Small Business Administration came to be during the Eisenhower administration, and it does indeed seem that part of the motivation there was indeed did have to do with this idea that people saw the Republican Party as being the party of big business. So here in choosing to, in a public way, support small business, they were trying to counter that big business image.
Yes, that's right. The Republican Party has had an interesting relationship with the Small Business Administration over the years, because some in the party, conservatives especially, have considered the whole mission of the agency contradictory. I mean, after all, government assistance to bolster free enterprise is a contradiction. And it did, in that sense, violate Dwight D. Eisenhower's conservative philosophy. But politically, it was ideal to inoculate the Republicans against the charge that they represented big business. And later, after the Civil Rights Revolution of the 1960s, it's Republican presidents like Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan who became big promoters of affirmative action for minority enterprise to inoculate the Republican Party against the charge that it was racist or it wasn't concerned with minorities. So it's the political relationships between the SBA and the Republican Party are fascinating to trace over the years.
Yeah, that's also another little interesting chapter. You know, one would not have thought that Richard Nixon would have been the most progressive guy on a topic like that, and yet here his administration was embracing this idea of developing and fostering black enterprise.
Right, right. Well, in fact, the agency was pioneering affirmative action for black business and other minority businesses years before Richard Nixon came along, but it was under the radar. One of the most interesting things that I found was that in August 1963, that was the month that Martin Luther King Jr. marched on Washington and gave his I Have a Dream speech, a young administrator at the SBA, Gene Foley, decided that he was going to help black businesses. And he set up an economic opportunity loan program to give loans and other assistance to disadvantaged business owners. And when the riots broke out in the 60s, these programs to aid black capitalists gained popularity in both the Democratic and the Republican parties. And when Richard Nixon ran in 1968, this was going to be his Republican version of what Foley had been doing for years, what the SBA had been doing for years.
Yeah.
And you've got William Buckley and Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon all saying that affirmative action was necessary. And in the early 70s, you have Democrats charging that this was reverse discrimination. So it's you can't take what we think of today, the party's positions on affirmative action, and project them back into the past. In fact, Republicans have laid the foundation for minority set-aside and loan programs over the years.
Just we should go on and talk about what happened when this strong affirmative action agenda came along, and that was in the Kennedy administration. But just real quick to wrap up with talking a little bit about the early years, during the Eisenhower administration, the function of the SBA at that time was pretty much just to loan money. Is that what it was about?
It was seen primarily as a sort of a government lender, a bank for small businesses, and it made direct loans. And it was very unpopular with private bankers at the time because they thought that the SBA was in competition with them. That was its primary mission. Well, in later years, the SBA started to make loan guarantees instead, working with banks, and so banks became big supporters of the SBA. But yes, you're right. Its primary mission in the early years was simply to make loans.
It was during the Kennedy administration, when there was growing concern about the issue on the federal level of civil rights, that now we start to see within the SBA this growing interest in supporting minority-owned business. And a lot of that apparently did indeed have to do with this man, Eugene Foley, who headed the SBA at that time. Was this also in a deliberate sort of a policy position taken by the Kennedy administration?
No. In fact, what's interesting is that when Foley took over, he participated in the march in Washington, and he was very eager to promote social change and to help minority businesses. But when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed, there was a big debate over whether or not the act was going to require special preferences for minorities, and opponents claimed that that was the case. So they got a provision that said that nothing contained in the act would require special preferences. So today we look at the Civil Rights Act as landmark legislation, and it was. It barred discrimination in employment and public accommodations. But to Foley and his aides in the SBA, they wanted to go further. They wanted to take positive action on behalf of minority businesses. And at that time, you couldn't even ask people to classify themselves according to their race. So they had to develop a system of racial profiling to eyeball job applicants and loan applicants and determine whether or not they were minorities, and then make special efforts to help them. So there was this tension there in the early days between the colorblind conception of civil rights and the desire of Foley to go beyond colorblindness and to embrace sort of a color-conscious programs for black and minority business owners.
Mm. And to go to the level of the administration and its interest in the SBA, as I mentioned before, it seemed that here there was the interest was, as had been the case sort of one way with Eisenhower, when they wanted to say, well, we're not the party of big business. See, we're in favor of small business. The Kennedy administration was saying, hey, don't say that we're anti-business. See, we're supporting small business.
That's right. That's right. You see the same sort of thing in the Democratic Party and with Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy had very real problems with the big business community. There were high-profile confrontations, particularly with the steel industry, when Kennedy thought that the steel executives had agreed not to raise prices. They did, and he began to wiretap them and send FBI agents to their homes and so on. So there was bad blood between big business and President Kennedy. Kennedy made an effort to reach out to small business to argue that the America's largest corporations were only the tip of the business iceberg, and that, in fact, most business owners were behind him. And when Kennedy and Johnson passed the big tax cut of 1964, they made a point of emphasizing that the tax cuts were going to help small business especially.
Well, we touched on the fact that starting in the Kennedy administration, in large part because of the efforts of the man who was running the SBA at the time, there was this growing emphasis on trying to support minority-owned business because that was part of the larger civil rights and anti-poverty agenda that began in the Kennedy administration and then, of course, continued into the Johnson administration. Looking at that being the one of the stated motivations there, and then if you look at what actually happened, did in fact that happen? And did minority-owned businesses benefit? Did it actually work the way people argued that it could or should?
Well, first, the programs, again, they had to be technically colorblind in 1964 and 1965. This is before people could come out publicly for racial preferences. So the standard was economic disadvantage. You had to be a poor person. You could be white. You could be Hispanic, you could be African-American. The emphasis was on what Foley called these Negro loans, and he made an effort to reach out to them. But in fact, the program was a disaster. Government agencies, including the SBA, were not good at identifying entrepreneurs on unemployment lines and helping them establish competitive businesses. One early student of this program, the Economic Opportunity Loan Program, said it was, quote, a device for perpetuating rather than alleviating poverty. 70% of the loans were delinquent. One SBA official said putting these people in business was like putting them in the ring with Muhammad Ali. You know, once they started to get hit, there wasn't much we could do. So these businesses failed in droves, and it really backfired. There was this effort to come up with conspicuous examples of minority success. Instead, the agency was creating conspicuous examples of failure. And so black militants and black power advocates in the 60s are savagely attacking the SBA, even as the agency is pushing the racial envelope to do more for black business.
This fellow that we've been talking about, Mr. Foley, I think that he was only head of the SBA for a couple of years.
That's right.
And then when he left, it was not in terribly good shape. Having said that, though, did he and his tenure, did that leave a stamp on the SBA that continued for a long time?
Yes. His administration was marked by two events. He came in with the March on Washington, which was sort of the high tide of the moderate civil rights movement. And he carried through his minority business agenda until he left in August 1965. Well, that was the month that the huge Watts riot broke out in Los Angeles. And when the riots broke out in the mid-1960s, that further entrenched racial preferences because white officials in the government and in the SBA were faced a real crisis. America's cities were burning. In Detroit in 1967, for example, 2,500 small businesses were looted or burned. It was literally like a wartime bombing. And so there was a greater urge, a greater urgency to do more to help black business owners in the inner city.
As you move then into the Republican administration of Richard Nixon, and we talked before about the fact that he indeed that this administration did embrace the idea of black enterprise and black entrepreneurialism, and so continued to support the program. Did things change, or did they mostly stay the same from the Democratic administrations into Republican ones?
Well, under Nixon, what we had is a huge upsurge in loans and government contracts given to minority businesses, not just African Americans, but also Hispanics, American Indians, and Asians. And there was one program in particular which has since become notorious. It's called the Section 8A program. This is a program that allows the SBA to set aside contracts for minority businesses. Actually, at the time, they're called disadvantaged businesses. These firms don't have to compete. They don't have to bid for the contracts. They're given the contracts at very lucrative prices. They're given additional assistance. So this program really became the centerpiece of Nixon's black capitalism, and it's still the centerpiece of the government's efforts to help minority business. Now, at the same time, throughout the Nixon administration, both his terms, Democrats were attacking these programs as promoting reverse discrimination. Even labor unions, the AFL-CIO said that Nixon's black capitalism program was, quote, anti-democratic apartheid. So you've got a strange partisan lineup during the Nixon years, and it's not until later in the 1970s and 1980s that Democrats embrace programs like Section 8A that are targeted at minorities.
It seems also this is what the subtitle of your book mentions, scandal. This seems like this is the point where we really start to see indeed what clearly seemed to be scandal and issues of corruption, I think.
Right. And a lot of the scandals, not all, flowed out of the black capitalism programs. The Nixon administration intervened on behalf of particular black firms, for example, that were supporters of the president. Some of these firms were engaged in criminal activity and ended up embarrassing the administration later. But there was this the program is racialized, it's politicized. The Section 8A program, because it allows the SBA to take a particular firm and give it to, to take a particular contract and give it to a firm of its choosing, introduces all sorts of political pressures. And those who are well-connected often receive many of the contracts. And the SBA was trying to encourage white business owners to partner up with minority businesses, which on the one hand makes sense. Who, after all, has the capital and the expertise in business? It was primarily white business owners. But what happened was many of these partnerships were bogus. They were fronts. The black business owners were fronts for white corporations. They received the contracts, and in turn, the white corporations did most of the work. So it wasn't really very effective at promoting competitive minority businesses.
We are just about at the midpoint of this first hour of Focus 580, and I should take a moment here to introduce again our guest. We're speaking with Jonathan Bean. He is Associate Professor of History at Southern Illinois University. He's the author of Beyond the Broker State, A History of the Federal Government's Policies Toward Small Business, 1936-1961, and the book we're talking about here this morning, which is an exploration of the history of the Small Business Administration, and that book is titled Big Government and Affirmative Action, The Scandalous History of the Small Business Administration. That's the subtitle, and this book is published by the University Press of Kentucky. And, of course, questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, anyplace else, and that is 800-222-9455. You match the letters and the numbers, you get WILL 333 WILL, toll free 800-222-WILL. And when all of this is going on, who is it that is organizing to represent the interests of small business? Because I think some people clearly would have said that really the Small Business Administration really wasn't doing that, and it was an arm of the government anyway. Mm-hmm. So what there were privately organized networks. There's the Chamber of Commerce. There's the National Federation of Independent Business, right?
That's right.
NFIB. When did that, particularly that group, come along?
Well, before the 1970s, the small business community was terribly disorganized, and Congress didn't take the existing small business lobbies seriously. But in the 1970s, with the great increase in government regulation and the creation of agencies like OSHA, Occupational Safety Health Administration, and consumer protection legislation, small business owners really felt overwhelmed and overburdened by government. And so there was a great movement in the 1970s among small business owners to organize and to make their voice heard in Washington. And the vehicle that most of these politically active small business owners joined was the National Federation of Independent Business, which I think by the end of the 1970s had something like 700,000 members. The 1970s is a period in which the small business lobby comes of age. But what's ironic for the SBA is that the NFIB, the small business lobby, couldn't care less about the SBA and the loans that it made. was skeptical about the minority programs. What the organized small business community was interested in was less government, and particularly deregulation. And that's something that the SBA wasn't pushing very hard in the 1970s.
Let's come now to the election of Ronald Reagan, because this is pretty interesting, another interesting part of this story. And that is that here we have an administration who comes into office with the stated intention to scale down the size of government, to curb the size of government, to curb spending, and that there were, in fact, people in the administration, maybe not necessarily Mr. Reagan himself, but people in the administration who thought pretty high on their list of stuff that they wanted to get rid of was the Small Business Administration. And as you suggested at the beginning of the program, when it was clear that that effort was not going to be successful, some people said right there, well, so much for the Reagan revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it within the administration that was targeting the SBA, and what were the reasons for that?
Well, the true believers, the Reaganites, those who embraced laissez-faire economics, did not like the Small Business Administration because they saw it as government meddling in businesses' affairs. You know, there was no rationale, in their opinion, for government aid to a selected group of businesses. So, I mean, it violated their laissez-faire philosophy. And the fact that it had so many scandals over the years in the minority business program, but in other programs, mafia loans were made, the bribery in some of the offices of the SBA and was exposed in the 1970s. So that these Reaganites thought that the SBA was the worst of all the agencies. And they could appeal to Reagan on this basis. Reagan came into office in 1980 promising to roll back government. And that's exactly what the small business advocates were demanding in 1980. And so it was consistent with Reagan's philosophy. I mean, Reagan's philosophy was government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem, and they could point to the SBA as being representative of the problems of, quote, big government. Reagan also said that the closest thing to eternal life was a government agency, which is something he found out when he tried to kill the SBA in the mid-'80s.
Well, one of the points I think you raise in the book is just, maybe that it doesn't really matter that Mr. Reagan himself wasn't specifically interested in the SBA, but that it was more than him, it was the people who were advising him, particularly David Stockman, who was the budget director, who were targeting the SBA. As far as the president was concerned, that specific agency might not have been on his radar screen unless, of course, someone said to him, here's the worst possible example that we can find is right here, and then he would have said, "Well, yes, I see what you mean, and let's do something."
Right, right. David Stockman, who was Ronald Reagan's budget director, and really put together his early budgets, getting rid of the SBA was on his agenda, and Reagan backed Stockman. Stockman tried to eliminate the SBA, but the truth is, and Stockman ended up concluding that in his bitter memoir of those years, that there were no real conservatives in Congress, because when he went to Congress to eliminate the SBA, the Republicans couldn't even find sponsors for this bill. So that again was sort of the death knell of the Reagan Revolution by 1985 and 1986. And Stockman ends up concluding in his memoir that getting rid of the SBA really wasn't Reagan's idea; it was his idea.
Now, you know, we did talk a little bit earlier about the fact that that the Kennedy administration, they liked the idea of supporting the SBA because they could say, you see, we're not anti-business, and that then the Eisenhower administration liked the idea because they could say, well, we're not just a party of big business here, we're supporting small business. That anybody within the Reagan administration say, you know, if we go after the Small Business Administration, then someone's going to come say, well, you don't care about business. You don't care about small business. You know that in fact that someone perhaps on the other side of the aisle would say, "Ha! Now we see what Republicans really believe in."
Right, right. Well, Reagan did order big cuts in the SBA budget during his very first year, and then the country plunged into recession. And there were moderates within his administration, in particular Elizabeth Dole, who ran what in effect was an Office of Public Relations. She was concerned about how the president was perceived by the public. And she wrote a memo, Big Versus Little Business, arguing that Reagan was going to be perceived as being anti-small business, as being uncompassionate if he didn't support further increases in government spending on small business and on minority business.
We touched on the idea that from time to time, the SBA has been plagued by scandals. Here, one of the big ones, in fact, happened during the Reagan administration, maybe one of the biggest political scandals of that decade, of the 80s. This was involving a corporation called WedTech. Maybe you could tell a little bit of that story.
Sure, sure. Well, by the late 1970s, there had been many exposés in the press and by congressional committees of minority fronts. Again, these were companies that were they had black or Hispanic or Asian business owners fronting for white corporations. The biggest example of this is what you refer to, the WedTech company. It was located in the South Bronx. It was originally called Wellbill. It was simply just a small metal stamping company. And in 1980, Ronald Reagan visited the bombed-out South Bronx and promised to do something to lift up that destitute section of the country. This company, Wellbill, had a philosophy that appealed to Ronald Reagan. Their slogan was, off welfare, on well-built. They got into the Section 8A program, the Minority Set-Aside program, because one of the owners was Hispanic. So what they proposed to do was to have the government give them contracts, 8A contracts, and they in turn would hire people who were on welfare. So this was going to be a sort of a hand-up, not a hand-out. Ronald Reagan loved this idea. He invited the head of this company, John Marietta, to the White House and described him as a hero for the 80s. But what ended up happening was that the WedTech company was a Ponzi scheme. They bribed SBA officials. They bribed members of Congress. Mario Biaggi, a Democrat from New York, was described as a hero cop turned congressman on the take. Also bribed Robert Garcia, who was a former head of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, bribed Clarence and Michael Mitchell, who were prominent civil rights leaders, and their uncle, who was head of the Congressional Black Caucus, dropped his investigation of the firm and retired from Congress before any kind of action could be taken against him. So, again, this was sort of a test case for the Reagan Revolution in the inner city, and it highlighted all the corruption, the fraud, and the incompetence inherent in these minority business programs.
And just in the interest of bipartisanship, I suppose we should also mention another scandal. during the Clinton administration, I'm sure people will have some vague memory of this. It concerned a little real estate project called Whitewater.
That's right. Whitewater, again, flowed from a minority business program. The investigation ended up becoming incredibly complex, and I think most people lost track of what was going on. But in the beginning, it began with the fraudulent granting of a disadvantaged business loan to Susan McDougal. Susan McDougal received a $300,000 disadvantaged business loan backed by the SBA. That $300,000 ended up in a partnership, Whitewater Development, co-owned by the McDougals and by the Clintons. The person who made that loan to Susan McDougal charged that Bill Clinton had urged him to do so, to break the law. The McDougals, David Hale, and Governor Jim Guy Tucker were all convicted of defrauding the SBA. And as we know, there was an independent counsel appointed. The Whitewater investigation began. It ended up with blue dresses and young interns and impeachment, but all began with a corrupt granting of a disadvantaged business loan.
And now with the Bush administration, the Bush administration comes into office, not necessarily talking about closing down the SBA, but certainly cutting the budget of the SBA.
You're talking about the first Bush presidency.
Well, I guess I was I guess I thought that it was the current president Bush who had done that. Maybe I'm confused.
He has made that proposal. What happened during the Reagan years was that the SBA sort of leveled off. Reagan was successful in checking the growth of the SBA, but since 1989, when Reagan left office, the loans made by the SBA have ballooned from $4 billion to $20 billion under Clinton. And you're right, the current President Bush is proposing to cut back, but we'll just have to wait and see.
We are at the point here, we have just about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. And for anybody who's tuned in, I do again want to mention, introduce our guest. Jonathan Bean is Associate Professor of History at Southern Illinois University. And if you're interested in looking at the history of the Small Business Administration, he provides a good, concise tale in his book, Big Government and Affirmative Action. The subtitle is The Scandalous History of the Small Business Administration. The book's published by the University Press of Kentucky and is out fairly recently, just came out a couple of months ago. And your questions are certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So it seems, Ed, you just said, it remains to be seen what this administration might have to say about small business, and obviously right now it's occupied with other sorts of things. But it seems that it's been around for now such a long time, and certainly has it must have some constituencies. And in spite of the efforts of probably the administration that placed the greatest emphasis on cutting government, it's still there. One would have to expect that chances are probably pretty good that the Small Business Administration is going to keep going.
Right, right. I think there's no doubt of that. There is some controversy over the minority business programs. There's a Supreme Court case that's going to be heard this month, at the end of this month, Adirond, which challenges the constitutionality of these so-called disadvantaged business programs. And so we'll just have to wait and see what the courts decide in terms of racial preferences. The future of those is open to question.
I think we have a caller getting lined up, and again, I just, of course, want to mention that for people who are listening, your questions and comments are certainly welcome. Don't wait till the very end if you'd like to be a part of the conversation here in Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. We have a caller in Crystal Lake. That's line number 4 right here. Hello.
Hi. I think I would define big government as one that regulates the economy, like regulates. It keeps agencies that protect the consumers and the public. And the way I would not define it as hurting people. Business doesn't want any regulation. That's been their whole thrust since Reagan. They want to weaken laws that protect labeling of consumer products, and they've been fighting, trying to get shorter. They've been cutting back the amount of money appropriated for the FDA, and they should really increase it so we have stronger regulation, like business doesn't want irradiated foods labeled because it would be like saying it's poison, and it is. Also, big government's really to get rid of all regulations, like don't regulate nuclear energy and things. The NRC is very weak, and I want to say that big government is what people need. They don't want a government that doesn't control corporations that do whatever they want. And as far as Whitewater is concerned, I don't know if the professor's right, because what I have read is, and I'm totally for the Clintons, but what I have read is that she she wrote a letter asking if it was appropriate to get that loan from the government. It's actually, small business gets appropriations more so that big business can say, we're doing this for little businesses. And actually, whether it's agribusiness and small farms, it's always agribusiness that gets most of the money. Small family farmers, that is, they have small acreage and own the farm independently. And the food is cheaper when you have small farmers, and they take better care of the land. Per Robert Feldman's book, he's a Ralph Nader
Pardon me, caller, but you've raised so many points, and we don't have a whole lot of time, and I have some other callers. Maybe we'll give our guest a chance to comment on.
Well, let me just quickly respond. Big government is one of the themes of my book, but by that I mean I'm trying to understand why does government grow, and why do government programs like the SBA, which have been so troubled, why do they grow? And secondly, I think people across the board, liberals and conservatives, recognize that regulations are justified, but that they place special burdens on small business, and so small businesses have been exempted from some of those regulations.
Let's go to, we have somebody here on a cell phone. Let's go right there on line number two. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
I have two questions. One in reference to the Susan McDougall SBA loan. It was my understanding that that loan was repaid. SBA suffered no loss. Was that wrong?
Well, the loan was repaid. The question is whether or not it was granted under false pretenses. In other words, she was certified as disadvantaged by a venture capital firm that specialized in disadvantaged businesses, and that venture capital firm received SBA funds. The person who ran that venture capital firm, David Hale, decided that everyone in the state of Arkansas was disadvantaged because he looked at education levels, you looked at income levels, and so on. And part of the problem with disadvantaged business programs is that the SBA is really not looking into what people are doing. And for example, it has to rely on statements that a person is of a certain race, and it's difficult to prove that that's not the case.
Well, I'm sure there are abuses like that, but I can tell you with my own experience with various government programs is that the program is set up to invite misrepresentation and dishonesty. Mm-hmm. There's a clause called the but-for clause, which you have to sign saying that but for this grant or this loan, this project would not happen. And in 95% of the instances, that's a lie.
Right.
The project's going to happen, and the developer's simply trying to sweeten the deal a little by getting, this government assistance, whatever it is.
That's right.
And so what Susan did in terms of claiming to be a disadvantaged person, in the first place, if she's a woman, she is disadvantaged in this society. And I always thought it was a real stretch for the prosecutors to make such a big leap to claim that from that misrepresentation it should fall all the way back to the Clinton.
No, no. Well, the Clinton connection was never proved.
Women were a whirlwind of charges thrown out there that were never proved, and the people who made the charges were never hauled up and made to apologize for the charges.
Right. But the point is that the loan was fraudulent. Women at that time were not considered a disadvantaged business category. In fact, the Congressional Black Caucus fought throughout the 1970s and 80s to keep them out of these programs.
But what it sounds like to me is a fraud was committed by David Hale, the owner of the SBIC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second question, now you've got me off track. I was told by the SBA administrator at our Springfield, Illinois office that 80% of the loans that they had made or she had made at that time, and I think this was in 1988, have been repaid. You know, she said, we get the worst applications. We get people that can't get loans anywhere else, and 80% of them are successful.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know, people enjoy giving us a black eye for not being good lenders.
Right, right. Well, one of the points I make is that not all the programs have been failures. The loan guarantee program has been fairly successful, and the loans are repaid. The management assistance program that they have called SCORE, which is made up of retired executives, who lend their advice to small businesses, that has been a success. So I don't want to give the impression that the agency is an out-and-out failure.
We just have a couple of minutes left. I hope the caller will forgive me. I want to try to get some other folks in. We'll go to Chicago next, line one. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I wonder what the professor would think. I run a small business since the steel mills closed back in the 80s, and I basically think we're living in a country that's not at all set up for small business. It's set up for large multinational monopolies.
Mm-hmm.
And that the whole idea that we were taught in school, you know, the dream, everybody start their own business, it's, to me, it's basically a fraud. It's a mirage that's sort of, you know, foisted on people to get people to try it. And I think I would never do this again. I think it was the stupidest thing I ever did. I went and got a job in another factory. I mean, it's... The Small Business Administration, to me, it's sort of like they're trying to do very small thing compared to this just whirlwind of benefits that accrue to these really large corporations. I mean, Home Depot in Chicago was given $1.3 million by the city of Chicago to help them build two stores. It was done in the name of economic development. And if you think about it, all that really happens is all the small mom-and-pop hardware stores in the neighborhood get put out of business by that.
Right. Well, one of the points I make in my book is that, you know, I assume that the business that you were operating was very small. The SBA concerns itself with, quote, small business, but its definition of small business is rather stretchable, and it's been criticized over the years for not focusing most on the truly small businesses, the mom and pops that need the help. Instead, it's focusing on businesses that have dozens or hundreds of employees who can pay back their loans. So they haven't taken big risks over the years.
Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go here to line 3 in Champaign for one last person. Hello.
Yes, I would just like to follow up on the last caller by saying, I mean, don't we need to think about this problem differently? Do we really have a free enterprise system in this country? Does the government really regulate large corporations, or do large corporations, by and large, write their own regulations in order to limit the competition from small businesses and to sort of create monopolistic practices or duopolistic practices? Don't large corporations basically want to socialize the costs of research and infrastructure and so forth, and then generate profits once the public has made it possible for them to do so? So don't we need to begin to think differently about the relationships between large multinational corporations and the government, and the fact that, you know, maybe a few sops are thrown to small businesses, but that's really in the context, you know, that shouldn't be understood in the context of the government interfering with free enterprise, but in the context of the government sort of lightening the blow a little bit in terms of their policies, which basically favor large business.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think both of the last two callers raised the point that the government is doing things for big business that might place small business at a disadvantage. And one of the things the small business lobby is very concerned with, and the SBA has gotten better at over the years, is serving as an advocate for small business before different government agencies, regulatory hearings, and the like. So I think that's an important role that the SBA has to play to make sure that the small business point of view is taken into account when considering some of these bigger economic issues.
But shouldn't we have a society in which, you know, I mean, shouldn't there be a larger philosophical question being asked here about the power of large corporations in our economic system, and the fact that they're basically publicly supported, although people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Boeing coming to Chicago and so forth. Look at military spending, look at infrastructure, look at the environmental costs that are paid by all of us, but not by corporations. I mean, shouldn't we be beginning to ask different questions about what kind of a society we actually want?
Yeah, and you raise different issues on the whole topic of corporate welfare. But I do think that there have been successes. The regulatory load has been lessened on small business. And while free enterprise isn't completely free in this country, the barriers to small business in this country pale in comparison to those in Japan or Western Europe, for example. So there are those opportunities for growth.
We're going to have to stop because we're here at the end of the time. We want to say, Professor Bean, thanks very much for talking to us today. We appreciate it. Our guest is Jonathan Bean. He's Associate Professor of History at Southern Illinois University. His book, if you'd like to look at it, is titled Big Government and Affirmative Action, The Scandalous History of the Small Business Administration. It's published by the University Press of Kentucky.